Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. This episode is from the Momentum Series, resurfacing the most popular episodes from our archives to shine a light on the continued growth of companies in our network. And now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Super excited for today's podcast, because with us we have Melissa Kozak, founder of Citus Health. Melissa, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Christian.
So our audience is in for a big treat today, because it's not every day that we have a founder who's had a material successful exit, but let alone a female founder. And so our audience is in for a treat. And with that, Melissa, if we can kick things off with the idea behind Citus Health and what was the root inspiration?
Absolutely. And first off, I'm really thrilled to be here. And if I could offer any experience, strength, and hope to founders out there trudging the road, I'd be happy to, for sure. And so just background on the kind of the company at the time of the origin of all of this, I was a registered nurse living in New York City, visiting patients in their homes and doing home care. It really didn't take very long for me to see the glaring inefficiencies in the industry. There were delays in care to patients when they had a question. They resorted to calling an 800 number, hoping to get a call back. I was physically driving and delivering paperwork between homes and offices. The care team was scattered. We couldn't connect with each other in an efficient way. So it was really chaos. And my patients were actually suffering as a result of it. And so I did envision a way to make it better through a software solution that would streamline all of it. But the funny thing is, I had no clue that I was just about to start a company. I literally just wanted a tool to make my life and my patient's life as a nurse better. So not knowing that you needed something called a technical co-founder, I approached a software development shop with my idea. And yeah, they quoted me $500,000 or something way out of my range to build this solution. And so I was pretty bummed. But a few weeks later, they actually called me back and said that they met this serial entrepreneur, healthcare IT thought leader who had experience with healthcare startups and really wanted to meet me. And that was Shahid, who ultimately became my co-founder. And when we met over the phone, it was like a rapid fire pitch session. I had no idea that's what it was going to be. He was asking me about market size problem, all of those kinds of things. And all I know is later on, he tells the story as she had me at hello. We were a really good match because he had the tech expertise that I lacked. And I was a subject matter expert in home healthcare, right? So yeah, we started our journey. We bootstrapped the business. I handled marketing and sales in the beginning. He had connections with affordable developers. And we got to an MVP and launched at a trade show. And lo and behold, my colleagues in the industry confirmed that indeed the problems I was experiencing were experienced by them. And we were first to market. We got those few first early adopters, and this momentum started where one customer saw another customer purchase, and there was FOMO going on. And before it, we really started getting traction in the market.
Important for other entrepreneurs listening to this is this idea of solving problems, mm-hmm. and not only being able to identify them, but then being able to solve them. So it'd be great to hear how your background as a nurse informed your personal view on how to build a company, knowing that this was your first time.
Yeah, I would say my background as a nurse informed the product side of things. Like, I knew there was a problem. I knew that there was a need to solve some things there, but I did not have any experience in business. I had never started a company. I never took a finance class or an accounting class in my life. So I didn't have that. But what was amazing was having the subject matter expertise really carried me a long way and still does today. And what I mean by that is when I approached potential customers, they didn't need a business salesperson to, which I ultimately became and am for sure, but they didn't need that kind of person to approach them. They needed someone who walked in their own shoes, that knew what it was like to only have the phone to connect with each other, that knew what it was like for patients to be rehospitalized because they couldn't reach someone soon enough. And I built that credibility with the market, and that was, I think, a large driver of the success. If I had come in and I had a business background and I had started a company outside of this particular domain, I don't know if it would have been as successful. And I really have to just give a shout out to the early investors, right, who backed a nurse who had no business background. And I did go some of the traditional funding route where, it was early friends and family, then it was angels, and then it was VCs. And these angels wrote checks to Citus Health with before there was even a product in some cases, because they clearly saw something in me because I was truly passionate about the problem that I was solving. I knew it was out there, and I knew there was nobody solving it in a way that worked for the market. And that was a huge piece of the puzzle.
And today, in our whole, there's a whole host of investors who have recognized the fact that being a subject matter expert in a segment is material advantage. In fact, arguably is a necessity in order to be successful, something, especially if something as regulated as healthcare. And so with that, you close your first client, you have you know what the issues are, but what was the experience of actually now validating the product relative to that first client's experience?
I will tell you that it was not all blue sky, and the road to success was far from smooth. Once we got to the MVP stage, we got a lot of rapid feedback from the market about, hey, yes, you're solving some of the right problems over here, but you really need to focus more. I thought that I was solving a problem just around patients getting support, but little did I know that there was even a bigger problem around care team coordination and streamlining some of those processes. So learning that, and also maybe it's different with other founders and other companies, but in my case, we're selling a product that is not fully baked yet. You're selling somewhat of a product and somewhat of an idea of a product. You are waking up to a bunch of emails about, hey, the product is breaking or it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And one thing that I did for a long time in the early years is get on the phone with all of those customers. I didn't care that my title was CEO. I literally answered the phone for a few years saying Citus Health Support. I wanted to understand what their challenges were. And we started building out our roadmap based on the voice of the customer, which was hard to take in the beginning because, to your point, it's a highly regulated industry. It is very difficult in the healthcare arena to get a company who's concerned about data breaches and patients' health data. And ever-changing reimbursement landscapes to actually write a check. That is a very hard thing to do. And then once they do and they are having challenges, I was just relentless about working to solve them. So very grateful to those early adopters who took a chance on a very early stage company who didn't have a track record, but had that innovative place inside of them where they wanted to try something new. And they really helped to shape the product.
What I hear is that when you have a founder who cares and by consequence listens, it's extremely valuable. Because my also sense is that a lot of times founders think they need to get it 100% correct, not realizing that there's such a thing as good enough and then iterating as you receive feedback. And so hearing that was the case, I think it's great validation that you don't always have to know everything, but be willing to and open to make changes as you learn.
Oh, come on. In the early days, Christian, I didn't know what I was doing with so many things. I remember sitting in front of VC investors when I was not yet ready to take on VC money. And they're asking me to walk them through a pro forma, and I didn't even know what a pro forma was, let alone how to justify numbers on a spreadsheet. Being a founder, you have to learn quickly, and you have to learn several different areas very quickly as the plane is flying 500 miles an hour. So yeah, you're right. Whether it's the product not being perfect, or you as the founder not being an expert yet in HR or finance or sales, it doesn't matter. Just start where you are. And if you're curious and hungry to learn and can tolerate a lot of blows, because there are, right? But you get back up, you can do it. And I really do credit my co-founder, Shahid Shah, teaching me a lot about that iterative process with product management early on and getting to that MVP, not building all the bells and whistles, because the bells and whistles are not going to look so shiny to the person using it.
Credit to Shahid, 100% agreed. And so that's actually a great pivot into fundraising and investor relations. What was your experience like raising capital? What worked and what were the challenges?
I think what worked was having fantastic traction. Sales speaks volumes. And so in the early part of the fundraising, what really worked was that grit. And like I said, people believing in me, believing that this nurse had a really good idea. And it wasn't so much based on a financial performance or sales performance of the business, because it was more angel focused fundraising. But as it got into the VC stage, it was really about, first of all, making sure that I had a good CFO on board to help raise money and help out with that process. And also having good sales. I was, and we were growing, and our numbers and our metrics looked really good. And in our last round of fundraising before our exit, I'm humbled and happy to say it was somewhat of an oversubscribed round, because I think the investors saw the traction here. And I think what they really liked was we were solving a very real problem in a very niche market that many people didn't really know about. We were first to market. And we also, at that point, I had assembled a team behind me that were also operational and clinical experts in the field that we were selling into, and they believed in that team. And that was just a recipe for a very excited set of investors.
And so, with that, as you reflect back on the journey, how do you, all things being equal, how do you now think about investors and ensuring there's alignment between your vision and theirs?
Yes, and it's a good question, because there are a lot of different types of investors. And along the journey, I met many, because I was in an early accelerator called DreamIt Health, based out of Philadelphia, where we did this investor roadshow, and I met many different kinds of investors. And ultimately, it really comes down to, first, as the founder or the founders, having a real heart-to-heart with yourself and each other to say, what do we want this business to be? Do we want this to become a $100 million business, or do we want this business to become what? Having that goal in mind, because some investors, you're gonna, just from that answer, you're gonna exclude them from the potential pools. Had that heart-to-heart. We knew the timeline in which we wanted to have an exit. We knew the size of the exit that we wanted to have. And with that, we were really looking at an investor who fit that profile, who was very founder friendly, who believed in what we were doing. We weren't looking for investors who wanted the unicorns, because that wasn't us. We were a good exit, but we were no unicorn. And so I think both sides have to look at, is this a right match? Because there are going to be some hard conversations. There's going to be board meetings. There's going to be that thing on the deck that was supposed to be that major piece of traction that falls through. And you're going to have to talk to that investor and say, look, I know I've been talking about this thing for 2 quarters. It's not happening anymore. And I have to pivot and figure out the next thing. And those are really hard conversations, unless you have a very collaborative team of investors behind you.
Yeah, and, I think there's a really, it's great to hear you say that, because I encourage all founders who are listening to this to appreciate that nobody gets everything right. Things go bump in the night. And having the courage and the be forthright is extremely valuable. And to your credit, I can say you did that. And having investors who appreciate that and are aligned, the irony of it is there's a level of sophistication there, Melissa, that I don't know that people who accept money necessarily have in the beginning. And having alignment, definitely valuable. Now, you also made reference to the significance of the team. I'd love to hear your thoughts about how you thought about attracting and managing top talent.
Absolutely. Most things early on in Citus Health, I didn't realize that I was attracting talent at first. And let me give you an example. I was actually obviously the first employee of the company, and I had some contracted developers, some contractors that were helping with things like marketing, et cetera, but I didn't have any full-time employees. And my first full-time employee, Terry, came about. I was actually pitching the company that she worked for. I was giving a demo to the company, and she was charged with evaluating different software solutions. And apparently it made such an impression on her. She reached out to me after, just asking me a little bit about the company, and one thing led to another, and I hired her. And she really helped me bring the company to another level because while I had been in the industry I was selling into for about 8 to 10 years, Terry was in it for 30 years. And she also spanned multiple areas of the business operationally, places I never saw or touched. So she was able to bring such an important perspective. And then from there, she hired people underneath her that were experts. So there was that as well. And it really was not everybody is fit to work in a startup. Not everybody is comfortable waking up to fires every day and those types of fire drills, and passionate enough to just do whatever it takes to make it successful, do whatever it takes to turn that customer around. And that's, you have to vet that out too. I made hiring mistakes in the beginning, hiring people that thought that they would want to work for a startup, but realized, oh, I don't really want to do those seven things that I wouldn't have to do if I worked for a huge corporation. And I would say to the prospects, hey, I still do demos, right? Which was a way of saying, I still sweep the floors. I'm the CEO and I still sweep the floors. You're going to sweep the floors too. And so you have to get people that will sweep the floors and do it with a smile on their face and wake up every day wanting to get it done.
Be great to see someone do a study whether or not there was a correlation between being humble and success. And I bet you we find out that there is. That's great.
Yes.
Important leadership lessons that you learned while building Citus.
I would say that a key is that I didn't know everything. I knew some things, but there was so much in leadership that was absolutely new to me, and I had to ask for help. I had fantastic advisors around me, you included, from the financial side and really the business side and the commercial side. So much working with you and getting your advice. And I had a few other really close advisors. And one thing that I was good at doing and not everybody is, I was good at asking for help. I was good at saying, I don't know how to do this. As soon as I started getting 5, 10, 15, 20 employees, and there were actually HR issues, and I was managing seasoned managers, talk about humble. And here I am wanting to ask them how I should handle a situation with them. So I think really the takeaway is part of being a good leader for me is just saying, I don't have all the answers, but I'm eager to find them out. I'm going to make mistakes, and I'm going to admit their mistakes and try to do better. And maybe the number one is really care about your team. Don't just pretend that you care about your team. Really care and care about their well-being and their work-life balance, which is very hard to obtain in a startup world, but they do have lives, they do have families, they do have children. If they are not the founders, yes, they'll be passionate, but this is not their baby the way it might be for you as the founder, and you have to be sensitive to that. So that's really been very helpful to me.
And so I'm in particular for the female founders in our audience. It sounds that's a really important lesson because I would imagine that there's some preconceived notion of having to be, hey, I do know everything, when in fact, I don't know that any founder does. Hearing you say that is extremely valuable. And I having borne witness myself, I think it did contribute to your success.
No, thank you very much for saying that. And yeah, I do think that there are biases, right, with female founders and females in business in general. And there might be this expectation that They have to work twice as hard and know twice as much in order to be as successful as their male counterparts and those kinds of things. And maybe some men are just better at announcing their accomplishments, and women are more reserved about that. There's a lot of different thinking around this. For me, I did not let it get in the way. I did not let it be a distraction that I was a woman. I went into every meeting, every boardroom, and I was in some boardrooms in New York City as this young founder, not in age, young in experience, with only a PowerPoint deck, talking to men in suits and holding my own. And I never once let being a woman stand in the way of that. And I will tell you that to be a successful founder, you have to act as if. You have to act as if you are so incredibly confident in yourself, even though inside you are walking that fine line between killing it and dying because of imposter syndrome and all of that. But I acted as if long enough that it became real for me.
That insight's worth its weight in gold. I wish we can talk longer, but I have to wrap it up here. Before I do, as you look back, what advice would you give your younger self if you were back to day one?
Yeah, it would probably be I would have to learn all the lessons about how to build a startup, and those were all amazing to go through, and I'm grateful that I had that rich experience for sure. But I would say from the mental and emotional part of this, which is it could be a very lonely journey being an entrepreneur because everybody has a stressful job and everybody's life is stressful. That's life. But there's a very special kind of stress that is reserved for a founder. And even your spouse can't truly know what that is like. So I think I would tell her, you're going to make it. It's going to be okay. If you just put one foot in front of the other and do the next right action a day at a time, this is going to end up a winner. And you can rest now. So it was really more about that mental emotional piece for me.
Melissa, thank you. Your feedback and insights are tremendous. If there's anyone in the audience who'd like to be able to get a hold with you, either because they want to do business with Sidus or just connect, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. You could reach me on LinkedIn. You can also, my email, melissa.kozak@situshealth.com, probably the best ways to reach me. But I would really love if there's any founders that would like to talk, if I could serve in any way and be helpful with my experience, that would be a real win for me.
Melissa, thank you. And that's another episode of the Innovators Investors Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez. Take care, everybody. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.